How do the best data scientists in the world master their data sets, train their models, and climb the data science ladder? Let's ask them. My name's Jeremy, and this is the Towards Data Science podcast.
Institution you're coming from, you can get access to the very latest research.
We also have to make sure that we're constantly revisiting our foundations and justifying why we're using the methods we are.
At that time, I said, and I want people to hear this, that you have worth and you have skills, and there's someone who needs that somewhere.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Towards Data Science podcast. My name, as always, is Jeremy, and I'm, of course, the host of the Towards Data Science podcast. I'm also on the team at the Sharpest Minds Data Science Mentorship Program. This episode is going to be a little bit different. We're trying out something new here. So we did do a video version of this episode. And if you want to check that out, you can go to the Towards Data Science YouTube channel. I recommend doing that. We're always trying to debug different things with our video so far. We're all kind of new to this. So please let us know if you have any thoughts about how we could improve that setup. Really excited about this new video format. I think it allows us to get a little bit more sort of immersive, go a little bit more immersive in the experience. And for this first video-based episode, we've got Tim Conkling and Adrian Troy from Streamlit. So Adrian is the co-founder of Streamlit, and Tim is one of their earliest employees who specializes in the gamification process, which they're really big on. If you don't know, Streamlit is a tool that makes it really easy to deploy data apps. And so what it essentially does is it takes away all the problems associated with the software engineering side of data science. You know, once you make a Jupyter Notebook, you want to share your result with the world. Jupyter Notebooks aren't necessarily the best format to do that. You might have pretty graphs, you might have visualizations, models, that sort of thing. But no one really wants to spin up your Jupyter Notebook locally on their machine. That's a bit of a pain. And a lot of people don't know how to code to begin with. So that's a real barrier to entry. So what Streamlit does is it makes it possible for you to create very easily an app, where you can have people play, like they go to a website and they play with your app, they play with visualizations, change different settings, and so on. So it's part of this family of sort of no-code apps that are really starting to come into their own. And I think it's a particularly exciting tool for anybody who's into data science, who's trying to get better at sharing their work. I think that's a really critical part. We've talked about that actually a lot on the podcast before. But anyway, so this is a really valuable area to look into. I recommend that you check it out. A great way to get a bit of a competitive advantage to if you're looking to apply for jobs, have a more showable portfolio and so on. So I'm really excited for this one. I'll leave things there and we'll go on to introducing Tim and Adrian, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the episode. All right, so I'm here with Adrian Troy, who's the co-founder and CEO of Streamlit, and with Tim Conkling, who is a senior software engineer at Streamlit. And we've got a really interesting conversation, I think, ahead of us here about what Streamlit is, why it's important. I think there's a whole conversation around community building, a whole conversation around even gamification, game design, and really why communication in a data science context is really one of the most important things. And I'm sure we'll be talking a lot about what a product is in data science. But I want to open things up a little bit with either Adrian or Tim. You guys can feel free to kick this off. Just a question about how you guys met, how you guys decided to start the company, or at least what the impetus was behind starting the company, and what the backstory was, at least. Maybe Adrian, I'll start with you.
Adrian, I think you should give the origin story of Streamlit itself.
Okay. Yeah. Well, the origin story is I decided to quit my job and I ended up traveling the world and I ended up doing personal programming projects. And in particular, I was working on some questions that my friend had posed about like how the stock market works. It ended up requiring like writing these simulations. Basically, we weren't trying to make any money or anything, but we were doing all this like Python stuff, and I really wanted a way to be able to, first of all, play with my own work really easily. So create a little tiny app that allowed me to change the sliders and look at the input output and sort of explore this creation that I'd made. You know, I mean, that's one of the really unique things about data science and machine learning is that you build these models, which are richer and more, you can't just understand them by looking at them on the screen, basically, by looking at like code, you know, it's more interesting than that. And so how do you play with it yourself and understand it? And then ultimately, you know, that sort of transitioned into how do you build a little application that you can share with others that captures the essence of what you're working on. Anyway, so that personal project, one of many, I might add, it kind of snowballed. People started using it at great companies, at Stitch Fix, Uber, and, you know, very sophisticated people. And then investors came and they wanted to put money in. And so it really felt like almost the company formation was like, we just put up a sail, and then and all of a sudden we were you know, going across the ocean, and then at the same time I had been working on computer games as a professor at Carnegie Mellon, and I had been working with Tim, and pretty much as soon as we started the company, I asked Tim to join, so he's co-founder in almost all but name.
Well, and actually maybe this brings us to Tim's part of the story. And I think there's an interesting, if a little bit hard to spot initially, overlap between this idea of gaming and then really what Streamlit is. Tim, can you speak a little bit to that overlap? Like, why was gaming relevant to what Streamlit has ultimately become?
Sure, yeah. So my background is as a game designer and programmer. That's what I've been doing for 15 years or so. I think game design is a lot about presenting systems to users, to players, in such a way that they understand and, you know, engage with those systems. And I mean, Streamlit is this, you know, Streamlit is this set of systems for understanding and engaging with data science. And there is so much of, you know, what Streamlit is sort of user interface, and not just from the perspective of what you see and what you touch, but also from the perspective of API design and like how you're actually, you know, the literal like programming interfaces between your code and, you know, Streamlit. And I think one of the things that Streamlit is really good at is being this sort of like a magic crayon, which is sort of like a game design term where you have a tool whose output is so much, you know, that magnifies the input that it receives and makes such big, you know, output so easily. And that is one of the things that, you know, that Streamlit does. Like it lets you visualize things with, you know, an absurdly small amount of code. And it's sort of like this very playful approach to data science and all sorts of other problems.
Yeah, I love that philosophy also because it seems to fit in with a broader trend that we've seen now over the last like 5 or so years. I think it's become especially obvious where the question of what data science is, what it means to be a data scientist, has now become entangled with the tooling that goes into data science. Yeah. Like it's no longer enough to just run a Jupyter notebook, import pandas, import scikit-learn, make a couple of like static plots in your notebook. Now the expectation really is, oh, you're going to deliver a live production system. You're going to give me something that's easy to play with, that I can spot trends in more easily. Broadly, that just like doesn't make it a pain in the ass to look at my data. Because like the more obstacles you put in the way of people exploring their data, the less they'll explore it, and the more they'll be taken by surprise by trends that they didn't realize were there. Is that a piece of feedback that you've seen? Is that a kind of an axis that you've really seen a lot of progress on with Streamlit?
And I think that's a very well put, and that is the core impulse behind Streamlit, which is that one-off explorations in Jupyter notebooks processes that have to happen over and over again, and if they're successful, then they become embedded in the company. So a question which might be like, well, you know, we used to work on self-driving cars. So, well, you know, I need to see a simulation of this running on all kinds of roads that have these properties and so on and so forth. Can you please do that and give me a graph, basically? Turns into, we need to do this every week in the weekly meeting. We need to give other people in the company an interface to do this as well. We need to add these features really quickly. Always happens, you know, oh, can we also, is there a way we can add a button that does this or that? And so one of the outcomes of data science is to create apps that become embedded into the operating system of the company. And we felt that that step was not well served. And so Streamlit basically is about build something that allows others to play, well, you, if you want, others to play with the data and make it extremely easy to build, but under the hood, give the entire power of Python, Pandas, Scikit-learn, TensorFlow, all the cool stuff. And we think that is a super, super fun package it's super powerful to have, and it's super, you know, interesting and cool and powerful to have within the context of an organization.
Well, I assume that I think I know what the answer to my next question is going to be, but I still want to kick it around because I think it'd be interesting. You mentioned, you know, now data scientists are empowered to do a lot of this development, and through Streamlit, you know, making it a lot easier. How does this affect the expectations that we have of data scientists? And then what does this mean for example, the role of a data scientist now relative to like the role of a software engineer or something like that? Are they starting to merge, or are they going to be different in important ways?
That's a great question. I think that software engineering still have a lot to learn from one another. And I think that they are distinct in the sense that data science code has a very different flavor from like building an app with millions of people building all these different things and stuff. You know, it's usually about sort of transformations of data and incremental changes and joins and learning models and so on. So basically what Streamlit does actually is try to make building an app feel like a data science project. So we don't want you to think clean slate, okay, where's all the widgets, where's everything go, how do we wire everything together? Mm-hmm. You just think, here's my data, here's how it's changing, can I add some inputs, can I add a little bit of variability in this data science code? And then that's the app, basically. So we think that this is a style of app building which makes it possible for data scientists to do this work without software engineers, actually. Mm-hmm. We're not trying to be all things to all people. If you have a super complicated app that's, you know, customer facing that 10 million people need to use, you probably need to hire like a team of software engineers to build that. And that's totally fine. We think that there's not only a lot of apps that are being built very expensively by software engineering teams, yep, where that needn't be. You know, that's it, that whole process of, we need an internal tool in the company, let's build it, it's this complicated thing, and there's all these, you know, iteration cycles are long, it can't be changed. We think that a lot of those tools can be built quite simply by data scientists, and that's very empowering to the data science community. I'll leave it there.
There's a lot of overlap between what Adrian just said and the relationship, like in game development, between
right,
programmers and level designers and programmers and just, you know, people who are working with data but not necessarily working with code. Mm. And one of the things that we think about a lot in game development is how to shorten iteration times for the team that's developing the game, right? So like thinking about the process from the from the development perspective, and the better the tools are at making very short iteration times, and the better the tools are at also sort of providing invisible safety nets so that, you know, a level designer is told if, you know, they make a level whose geometry is like way too big or whatever, that's gonna break the game. The more that those tools, you know, sort of are there to lend a helping hand, the shorter the they sort of enable iteration time, like the better the output will be, because you can run more experiments in your head and you can run more experiments, you know, on the computer. So essentially, I think what I'm trying to say is the more you can sort of separate the need for a designer, be it a data science designer or a game designer, to work hand in hand with a software engineer, the faster that designer's output is going to be and the better it's going to be, because they're going to be able to experiment more. And that is what is extremely attractive to me about it. Like, you can, it's a tool that enables enables some best practices around software development without needing to have, you know, a program like a software engineer sitting next to the data scientist who's writing the Streamlit script.
And I guess, does it imply as well that like data scientists need to be a little bit more design savvy? Like, now that you have this newfound power, you're able to build an app without having to use, you know, Flask, Heroku, without having to like to code stuff up in Django or whatever you're going to use. Like, now you can make things pretty. And does that mean that you ought to spend a little bit more time thinking about what pretty means in that context?
Yes, I think if you like making things pretty, then you're one of us, because we also obsess over that. And I think that's one of the really fun parts of building, you know, visual app artifacts for others, is that they bring joy and they're pretty and they're cool, you know? We've taken, a bit of a walled garden approach to that thus far, which is like, we will provide tools and we will take it upon ourselves to make sure that they look good together.
Right. Yeah,
in essence, without you having to think about it too much. And I think that's actually one of the ways in which Streamlit is quite different from Plotly Dash and some other, you know, dashboarding tools, which really put visual customization first. And we think that gets a little fiddly, honestly. And it gets really hard, actually. So we decided to start with just take these elements and put them together and they'll look good. Mm-hmm. And now as the community is growing, we are hearing more and more, we want to be able to change this, we want to be able to change that and make it on brand and change the colors and stuff. And so I'd say one of the big arcs of Streamlit's development is enabling that while also being thoughtful about not turning it into a very, very fiddly, change the pixels between two lines of text and,
right,
you know, iterate on the color 100 times and so forth.
And you mentioned community as well as earlier, that is before we started recording, as one of the distinguishing characteristics of Streamlit and what you're building there. What's the role of community right now in the Streamlit ecosystem?
The community is sort of everything. they use their product, of course, which is the whole point. And hopefully do great things and really benefits them. Also, you know, from our perspective, they act as ambassadors. Every Streamlit app is an advertisement for Streamlit itself. Every comment on Twitter and so forth is part of people understanding why Streamlit's special and understanding the excitement that we feel about it. And then on a technical level, they play essentially a central role in helping us understand what to build, how to build, and calibrate it. And in fact, the marquee feature we released last month was custom components, which Tim led, and which was heavily built. Essentially, the entire development was woven through with community members.
Wow.
I don't know if whenever you want, we're happy to chat about
that process as well. If you want to go ahead, yeah. And I'm sure Tim will have something to say about that too.
Yeah. Tim, do you want to talk about, I mean, this is one example. This is probably, I would say, one of our most successful examples. We're trying to repeat what Tim did and make it a playbook. But Tim, do you want to talk about a little bit how we use the community in the development of custom components?
Yeah. So custom components is this new Streamlit feature that basically lets you build front-end components that, you know, interface really, really easily with the Python side of Streamlit. So basically now you can, you know, whereas Streamlit before provided, the ability to display a line chart, the ability to display a slider, you know, it had all of these components built in that were, and that comprised the entirety of what you could, you know, put onto the front end of a Streamlit app. Now you have the ability to write your own front-end components. The process for developing custom components was, as Adrian said, like very connected to the community. So we had this goal of, shipping custom components as a feature, and making sure that from a design perspective, it sort of adhered to Streamlit design principles. And a big part of that is its API design. Basically, like, what are the fewest lines of code that you can write mm-hmm. to create a component? And a component necessarily comprises two different programming languages, right? You have a Python side and you have whatever language you're writing on the front end. And we had gotten like fairly good at, at understanding what it means to, you know, design the Python APIs that comprise Streamlit. And then, so a big part of custom components was also like, how can we bring that same attitude towards front-end development, especially since the people who are creating these custom components in many cases won't feel that they are, you know, front-end developers. Like, there's going to be more sort of like technical uncertainty in developing these front-end components. And so, the process is actually very simple for how we did this. It just involves a lot of iteration. So we basically developed like an internal plan, an internal design, threw together, an 0.1 prototype, and then started soliciting community members to be part of a closed beta that lasted for a number of months. And the way that worked is more or less exactly like you would expect. We would develop a new version of custom components. We would ship, I think this is actually a really important part. We would ship alongside both templates and examples so that people could, and also docs, of course, but like, we shipped it with, out of the box, like you can create a custom component by writing like literally, two lines of JavaScript and one line of Python, or at least that was the sort of like goal that we were moving towards. We started with like a pretty small pool of community members. And one of our community members who is sort of, I think like he's officially or unofficially working for Streamlit now, Adrian Finella.
Well, he's no, he doesn't work for Streamlit. He's just really, really an amazing member of the community, and
he's like our primary ambassador. Ambassador. Yeah,
power user.
He super power user, but also like just this really thoughtful guy who is interested in extending Streamlit and using it for himself, but also in bringing more people into the fold. Mm-hmm. Yeah. With Finilo sort of like leading this community closed beta, we went through many iteration cycles, and what those iteration cycles looked like was us putting out a new version of custom components, people creating their own custom components, and then telling us all of the ways that our design was failing, and we would make incremental progress. And it felt very much, I'm probably going to keep just bringing this back to games because that's my habit, but it did feel very much like a playtest process that like we do with Gander. You have an idea in your head, and that idea will not sort of be, will not be fully realized. If you're designing something for other people to use, that idea won't be fully realized until you get it in front of them and then repeat this iterative process of discovering what are the ways you are meeting their needs, what are the ways you are not meeting their needs, and how do you close that gap?
That makes a lot of sense. I imagine in that iterative process, you would have learned as well a lot about how people are using visualizations. Like, because, this is a process where people try to make a visualization that they want. Then they go, can I even do this with Streamlit? Like, how do I figure this out? Did you get some insights into like maybe some unexpected visualization strategies that kind of threw a wrench in things initially? Or
I don't think that there was anything that like completely took us by surprise, but interactivity on the front end is like a really, that is, I think that is the thing that custom components can deliver much better than, than Streamlit out of the box. Streamlit's non-custom components can, because interaction is so specific to the problem being solved. And so the most interesting and exciting custom components that people are developing do involve interaction on the front end, and the way that, you know, like a user painting something onto a canvas or something like that can feed back into a Streamlit data science app.
It makes a lot of sense. And actually, I think it's probably a good sort of advance warning as well for people who are into data visualization, data science. Like, the expectations around interactivity are going to start rising with tools like this. It's worth starting to think about, how can I present my data such that people can take a little bit more ownership? Because I guess this also empowers product managers and CEOs to say, hey, I want to dig into the data my own way, even if I don't know how to code. Like, is that something that you've heard from PMs, from people who oversee data scientists, who now feel maybe a little bit more empowered to dig into the data themselves because they have a front end to play with?
Totally. And I think a great example of this is actually Delta Dental, which discovered Streamlit over a weekend. We didn't know about this at all. We didn't know them. And they started building an app in Streamlit for which they were originally going to use another very expensive commercial tool. And not only did they create this app over a weekend practically, but to your point, it was so useful that it started to creep into other parts of the organization. And so this was an app to actually understand their customer support. They do all this sentiment analysis. It's actually really cool. They do a ton of ML on customer support, and they have all this very, very deep understanding of what's going on, basically, as they try to help their customers achieve their goals. And so now this app, as far as we understand it, by the way, we can't see what other people do with Streamlit. It's not a SaaS service in that way. It's just a pure open source library. But what we see is that we started off in the data science team. Now there's a version of the app that actually is running in the customer support center. And there's another version of the app that's running for the executives. It has really, it has grown into something that's more broadly useful. So I think that's a very natural evolution. And it's an example of the way in which the data scientist's workflow can, or really the data scientist's power and influence can be sort of like multiplied into an organization in a way that's just beneficial for everyone.
Right. Yeah. Actually, that power and influence. I mean, it's a persuasion job or a persuasion function,
yeah,
ultimately,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah. It's persuasion, and I think it's also a way of empowering other people to do their jobs.
Right.
So I've just seen this so many times in practice. It's basically like the data scientists are gatekeepers to this incredibly valuable thing. And to the extent that data can become part of other people's processes and part of the operation of the company itself in a general way, that is the model of companies in the future, where everyone can go to click on a website and suddenly understand something that allows them to make a better decision. And that's kind of what we're building towards.
And as powerful as it, Tim, yeah, go ahead.
I wanted to jump in and just say, I feel like we've been saying, these are things that data scientists will have to, will have to learn and grapple with, which makes it sound like, is Streamlit just, creating more work for people? But I think essentially what Streamlit is doing is allowing exploration of things like interactivity and visualization in a very playful way where you learn to become a better UX designer through doing this pleasurable activity of actually designing apps that other people are excited to use and that are working and that are using or exploring your own data in ways that that shorten that iteration loop and just make the whole thing more pleasurable.
Yeah, no, I think that makes a ton of sense, especially when you think about nowadays people do expect data scientists to deliver something like an app. It's just that the front end is usually garbage, because by the time you've done the Flask, Heroku, the Django, maybe even the JavaScript, you're emotionally exhausted and there's no time for HTML, CSS. So, you know, you're just getting a prettier product faster. But so in on that front, and I think this will be a question for you, Tim, because of the sort of game design overlap here, obviously tools like this always come with a certain learning curve. And I can tell you, I remember my days of figuring out basic web dev using, in my case, it was a Flask AWS framework. That was a pain. I hope not to repeat that ever again, especially as a data scientist, right? Because you're not wired for web dev. It's just not considered, that's not why anybody gets into data science at the end of the day. What is it? What would you say the learning curve looks like with Streamlit, and maybe how does it compare then to the classic, you know, web development frameworks?
Yeah, so I think the best if I were to just say, oh, it's super easy to make a front end component, that wouldn't mean a whole lot because I do, you know, front end development for my job. So I think the reason that we are pretty confident in how sort of easy and flexible custom components are to deploy is because of, you know, first our closed beta users, and now that the feature is out there in the wild, other, you know, not people who weren't in the closed beta who are using and building custom components and are extremely pleased that, you know, they're the fact that they knew what React was but had never touched it or whatever, like, didn't prevent them from you know, creating a custom component. So I think what we're trying to do with custom components is essentially, if you are a complete noob when it comes to front end development, like, we want to put a template in front of you that makes it extremely clear what is going on, and also sort of like provides, you know, a very quick stepping stone to getting a React-based component, you know, in your Streamlit app. If you are a seasoned, you know, front-end developer and you don't like React and you don't like JavaScript or TypeScript and you want to use some other, you know, more exotic language, like, we support that as well, right? Because basically a custom component is just, you know, HTML and code running in an iframe. And so you can, any sort of language that can, you know, that can cross compile to JavaScript will work as a custom component. So we, you know, our goals were make it easy for somebody who has never done front-end development to make a custom component. And the way that we do this basically is just by providing templates and examples, right? Like templates that you can play with, you know, that comprise a very small amount of code and that just sort of like make it clear what is going on. So that's how we bridge the gap between people who have never done front-end development and, you know, want to make a custom component. But then on the other end, you know, like, we are as unconstrained as possible. You don't need to use our templates. You don't need to use the languages that we're, you know, that our templates are shipped in. Awesome. I feel like I've possibly lost even the plot of what the question was. It was about ease of use. Right.
Yeah. Basically the learning curve, like, I guess I'm trying to figure out, you know, if I were to pick up Streamlit, let's say tomorrow, I say, okay, I've got my my data visualization code written up and I want to convert it into a Streamlit app. This is obviously hard to estimate because who knows how many visualizations, how many different kinds of plots I'd have to learn to use. But just to get a basic app off the ground, like, do you have a, just for people who might be listening and say, okay, I need to set aside X number of hours to ramp up in this. Do you have a rough estimate of what X might be?
If you have Python and pip somewhere, then you will be up in about 30 seconds, and it can be interactive. And from there, you can, basically every slider is a single line of code. Every text input's a line of code. You know, matplotlib figures are however many lines of code it takes to write, make a matplotlib figure, but not more. So, you know,
That's also out of the box without custom components. Like, Streamlit provides a huge Swiss Army knife without custom components. So you don't need to write front end code at all, right? There's like, there's a huge, like, getting started, you can get very far with the, you know, the stuff that comes in the toolbox before you need to start thinking about adding your own additional tools.
Yeah. Oh, very cool. Okay, well, that's awesome. I mean, really, really quick, and it's been really cool to see that timeline kind of shorten over time as these tools have gotten better and better. What do you see as the future of this kind of tech? Because I know Streamlit is like, I don't know, it's something absurd, like 18 months old or something, and you're already at this scale and it's picking up like crazy. I've seen it referred to at Sharpest Minds, the company I work with. We got mentees who are just like using Streamlit all the time. And I hadn't heard of it like, you know, 3 months ago or whatever.
Yeah.
So what's in the future? Is there a direction that you're kind of laser set on, or is it just grow for the moment?
The future for the moment is really focused on the open source project and making, removing every barrier for not using Streamlit, basically. So we think that there is a set of use cases already. Basically, Streamlit is amazing if you're going to make a certain type of app. We want to make it amazing. And that app is like, we have some sliders, we have some models, we see the output as we change the sliders. We just think it's the best product to do that. We want to make it possible to build any kind of app. So we want to extend that same ease of use to allow you to have, state in the app so you can remember which customer you're looking at and go into multiple pages and see all kinds of things. We want to make it so that you can add any kind of visualization you want. That's custom components. We want to make it so that you can do any kind of layout that you think that you want. And we want to preserve that core of like incredible ease of use, that like 0 to 60 in 30 seconds that we think is, people call it time to value, you know. You mentioned Stripe before the interview. A similar thing with Stripe. It was, you know, in one line of code, you're taking credit cards, right? So We want to make sure that it's really the whole goal is we want to preserve this core, fun, super fast app development framework. And then we want to take bits from the rest of the app world and we want to bring them in. And so that you're never limited. You don't hit a wall. You can ultimately do anything. So we're really focused on that from product side, and we're focused on building the community. We're focused on Twitter and the discussion forums and helping people build components and encouraging people to share apps with the world. And so that's the real focus for this year.
Awesome. Really excited.
I wanted to sort of draft off what Adrian was saying, which is that there is this interesting tension, right? Like whenever you have something that's easy to use and you want to expand its capabilities, there's this tension between maintaining that ease of use and increasing the surface area of, you know, like what somebody needs to know in order to get started. And it's like, okay, now I need some custom interactivity on the front end. Oh, I can just reach for this thing that's over there. I didn't need to know about that ahead of time. I didn't need to factor that into my, you know, into my thinking from moment one. Like there's still this like very easy to get into, playful, basic Streamlit app that will always be incredibly simple to design.
Yeah, I guess it's that new adage about no code apps and how eventually every no code app eventually devolves into a code app because you're trying to give people so much capacity to make edits and stuff.
Totally.
Very cool. Well, thanks so much for sharing the story, and I'm really looking forward to hearing what Streamlit has in store in the coming weeks, months, and years. Is there a Twitter handle you'd recommend people go to follow, or a community they can, or I know there's a community they can get involved in, but where can they get involved in the Streamlit community most easily?
I would suggest going to the forums, basically, so discuss.streamlit.io, and then the Twitter handle is @Streamlit. So there you go. Yeah, and that's all the latest stuff that's coming out, as well as we love to highlight really cool apps built by the community. That's a great place to get started.
Yeah, the Discuss forums, like, it's a lot of, it's, you know, members of the community, but it's also like the entire engineering team, the entire team, the entire Streamlit team spends time in the Discuss forums. That is our sort of like main, that's everybody's main interface, I think, to the community.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Okay, well, I mean, great having you guys here, and thanks for sharing all that. Sounds like a really great opportunity for people to get involved as well. So really appreciate Adrian, Tim. Thanks so much for joining.
Yeah, thanks, Jeremy.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. It's super fun.